I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. on Monday, March 9th, 2020. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Schauer, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. We're expecting the other senators. Yes. Or just running a tad bit late. Before this afternoon, we have two items before this committee. First up, we'll hear the one of the confirmation hearings for the governor's appointee to the state medical board. David Boswell is joining us by phone today. And later on, we have Senate Bill 229 by Senator Kill. First, we'll invite Mr. Boswell to place himself on the record and speak to your qualifications and resume as they relate to the board, state medical board, and why you are interested in serving the board. Mr. Boswell, are you with us today?
I am with you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. The floor is yours, sir.
Excellent. For the record, my name is David Boswell, and I want to begin by thanking you all for taking the time to meet with me today. So I'm happy to introduce myself to you as an Alaskan minister who has been working in Fairbanks at the Northern Lights Church of Christ for the past 15 years. I would consider myself very active in the community here. My wife and I had four children. Before we began foster parenting, we foster parented for a number of years. Of those nine foster children we had, we ended up adopting four of them. So we have an Alaska Native son as well as three other Alaskan children. And so ultimately I have seven sons and one daughter. My oldest son is married and moved to the lower 48. All the rest are still here in Alaska. Two of my sons are full-time students at the University of Alaska here in Fairbanks. Another son is a member of the Laborers Union Local 942. My daughter and other three sons are currently still being home educated here in Fairbanks. So our family is also a very musical family. We have been very active in the music community. Each of my children have been trained in the Suzuki program here and participated in the Youth Symphony program. My wife is the vice president of the Fairbanks Youth Orchestras, and my oldest son still at home has graduated onto the Fairbanks Youth Symphony. And so we have been active in that element of the community here. I've always personally been interested in the medical field. When I was in my younger days, I did 3 years of genetics and biochemistry at the University of Alberta in Canada, where I grew up. And at that point in time, I was called to seminary, and so I got a bachelor's degree in theology and prepared me to undertake the role that I have here in Alaska, and I think also kept my interests alive in the things that we're looking at here today. Now, I believe that the community here in Alaska has been very good to me and my family, and we feel very blessed to have been participants in the community, and we have received a lot from the community. And so part of my interest in this role is the opportunity to give back to this community, which me and my family love so dearly. We've benefited greatly, and we want to be able to give back in a meaningful way, which I believe this role will allow me to do. Now, I recognize the importance of this job, and I'm also committed to perform it to the best of my ability as an opportunity to serve in this community. My life has been dedicated to service in serving the church, and now I am grateful for the opportunity to serve the people of the state. And so I want to thank you for considering me today, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have for me.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Boswell. Before we ask you questions, just want to put on the record that we were joined by Senator Giesel and Senator Von Imhoff. Any questions for Mr. Boswell?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Begich.
Mr. Boswell, through the chair, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you for your commitment to service and to your community, and especially for fostering kids, very important. I do have a number of questions that I hope that you'll be okay answering. And I think you have really touched on one of them, which is my question about why you're interested in serving on the board. Were there other boards that you applied to serve on as well, or was this the only board that you applied to serve on?
I am currently on the Governor's Council for Disability and Special Education, and I have, of the children that I adopted, they all have varying degrees of FASD, and that has given me the opportunity to provide input into that community as well.
Continue, Senator Baggage.
Yes, if I can. But were there other boards that you applied to be on other than this board? You're already on the Governor's Council. I didn't see that noted in your qualifications. But were there other boards that you applied for? Was the medical board? Why do you want to serve on the medical board? Let me just.
These two are the only two that that I did was asked about. The Governor's Council, when I have been willing to serve in whatever way, when I looked at what was available, these were the two that I felt I would be best suited to. Obviously, as a minister, it's an excellent opportunity to use my ethics training to be able to serve the community here in the best way possible.
Thank you, Mr. Boswell. I have a few more.
Okay? Yes, Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've mentioned in your background your ethics, and you mentioned 3 years when you were doing your undergraduate work in biomedical. What else might be in your background or lived experience that would contribute to your ability to oversee a professional licensing for Alaska's medical professionals?
Obviously, as a minister, I deal with individuals in the state of all varying levels and degrees. And so one of the things that I've always been comfortable with is working with people from all levels of economic, socioeconomic backgrounds. So I'm very comfortable working with physicians and legal professionals, as well as working with just the average, guy off the street, which I think puts me in a unique position to be able to represent a great cross-section of the state of Alaska.
Senator Baggage?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Boswell, for that. The board adopts regulations to carry out laws. It also deals with final licensing decisions, but more importantly, it takes disciplinary actions against people who may violate those licensing laws. Have you ever been involved in processes and systems that provide disciplinary action against people who violate state law?
No, this would be my first time in that particular type of position. As a father of eight, though, I think I'm kind of, that's prepared me to do a lot of disciplinary action.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Baggage.
It does. Perhaps, though, there are details in this law that might extend beyond family disciplinary matters, I would think.
But, absolutely. I understand that.
And how familiar are you with the state board regulations and statutes? Have you taken some time to familiarize yourself with them?
Oh, have I ever. I have spent, since all of this was introduced to me when I was appointed about a month and a half ago, it was an opportunity for me to spend a great deal of time reading over and learning a great deal about the state laws with regard to the licensing, as well as the laws governing the boards.
Yeah, and I guess maybe you've mentioned that you were a minister, that's one of the reasons you moved away from the biological education work you were doing.
You
felt the call to the ministry. Do you believe you can separate, if you will, your religious beliefs from your secular role on this?
Absolutely.
Those are my questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Von Nehmaw.
Thank you. So do you, as in your role as a minister at this point, do you go into hospitals with families near the end of life, working with hospice or doctors or nurses, administering last rites or something along that nature? Do you do that?
I do. I have been doing that for the entirety of the 15 years that I've been a minister. There are obviously within a church life cycles, and so there are some years where I'll spend a great deal of time in the hospital and other years where I'll spend considerably less. About 8 years ago, I was actually volunteering with the hospice of the Tanana Valley here in Fairbanks and went through a bunch of their hospice training and spent some time with them. Members of the community here doing that, and ultimately it was a really good thing for me, even though it wasn't something that ended up being a long-term project of mine.
Thank you. So you said you've had some hospice care, and and you're there at the hospital oftentimes or whatever location for last rites, do you have then discussions with physicians about when a patient may be approaching the end of their life and when it's time for you to come in? And have you learned anything? What have you learned, I guess, during that experience in regards to just patient care and biological responses towards the end of life?
Yeah, I guess I haven't necessarily had conversations with physicians about that specifically here in Fairbanks. I spend a lot of my time with the patient as well as with their families is where more of my focus is in ministry. And so, but I'm definitely comfortable being around with the families when the physicians come in and have those conversations, and obviously trying to keep those conversations appropriate in my role there. I don't make it very technical about the end of life kind of things there.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Boswell, for applying for this position as well as the one you already serve on. So have you, you mentioned, I think, that you were appointed a month and a half ago. Have you had opportunity to observe or listen in on a Board of Medicine meeting yet?
No. In fact, the last Board of State Medical Board meeting that was occurring was while I was in my capacity on the Governor's Council for Disability and Special Education in Juneau. They're trying to let you guys know about some of the initiatives we were encouraging at that point in time. So that was a kind of a conflict there as far as the timing goes.
Okay, understood. So you were asked a couple minutes ago by another senator about your comfort making disciplinary decisions. You are aware that the State Medical Board is a quasi-adjudicatory authority board.
Yep.
And that licenses are a property right. Is that true?
Licenses are a property right?
Are you aware of that?
I guess I hadn't thought of it in those terms.
Okay. That is the case. They are property, and so discipline is very structured and meted out with care and significant documentation, not simply based on the opinions of board members. So just something to think about, that's all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions from Senator Bagich?
Just an apology, Mr. Chairman. I note now that as I'm looking again at his file, I did see the reference to the Disabilities and Special Education Council. It's because in the frame under general information, the medical board is listed as a second choice, so I had just read that completely wrong. So.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for your time today, Mr. Boswell. Just want to thank you for your time, and is there a motion to move Mr. Boswell's name forward from the committee? Senator Von Imhoff.
I move the appointment of David Boswell to the State Medical Board be forwarded to the joint session for consideration, and this does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions.
Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease, and we'll let Senator Keel get all set up. The record here. At this time, we have our initial hearing on Senate Bill 229, Liability of Consulting Physicians, by Senator Keel. We'll hear an overview of the bill, take public testimony, and we have the bill sponsor and his staff, Ms. Kathy, here to speak to the bill. Just remember to place yourselves on the record. You may begin when you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Appreciate you hearing the bill today. My name is Jesse Keel, and I have the privilege of serving as Senator for District Q. Mr. Chairman, this is a weird one for me. This is not a bill you might expect from someone who, when Alaska's current medical malpractice liability caps passed, thought they were too low, too tight. But this is different, and this one's really important. The practice of medicine is complex. There are countless different specialties and subspecialties, and medical professionals frequently consult with one another to get the advice and expertise they need. A generalist might call a specialist in a certain bodily system or organ to help decide whether to treat a symptom or refer a patient for full workup and treatment by that specialist. A specialist might call a psychiatrist about a mental health condition that's complicating treatment. Or the sole doc in a small town might call to a doctor in a hub or our largest cities to help decide whether to treat an injury or an infection at home, or call for a medevac with all the costs and risks that those can bring. The term for these consultations when they're informal and unpaid is a curbside consult. Sort of give you the mental picture of docs stepping out of the hospital and just chatting about something over the hood of the car. Patients don't see these, but they are an essential part of Alaskans' healthcare. And these consults, curbside consults, are what Senate Bill 229 protects. So why do they need protection? About a year and a half ago, roughly, there was a case in Minnesota. The Minnesota Supreme Court looked at a case where something went wrong. They decided that the consulting doc could be on the hook for damages to a patient. Now, that consulting doc had never seen the patient, never treated the patient, never took a fee. It was, in many ways, a first-of-its-kind ruling, and it freaked out the medical community pretty thoroughly. So without this bill, if that sort of ruling holds, the best-case scenario, the best we could hope for, is significant increases in Alaskans' healthcare costs as medical malpractice insurance rates rise. But that's not the most likely outcome. The most likely outcome, I think, is worse. With our long distances, our small communities, and relatively few specialists, I would argue that Alaskans' healthcare would suffer more if doctors stopped doing curbside consults in just about any place in the nation. And that, I think, is our greater risk. If docs stop taking these calls, stop chatting over the hood of the car, not only do malpractice rates rise anyway, but there is more risk to patients as treating doctors lose access to expertise, to colleagues' experience and advice. So Senate Bill 229 shields the consulting doctor in a curbside consult from liability if the patient gets injured. Mr. Chairman, I started out by saying I'm not a big fan of malpractice caps. Senate Bill 229 ensures that an injured patient, in that rare case where there really is an error, still has access to justice. And that's important. The treating doctor, under this bill, cannot reduce her liability by shifting part of the blame to the consulting doc. The doc who lays hands on the patient remains on the hook and remains, frankly, responsible for patient care. That's how we all understand it. That's the fundamental point of the bill. Alaskans can go to the doctor and get seen. The docs can get the advice and expertise from their colleagues that they need. Alaskans get the benefits of that without raising costs, without raising risks, without denying anyone access to justice. Mr. Chairman, that is Senate Bill 229. I'm happy to answer questions, and I also have Kathy Schlinghide here of my staff who can probably put the elbow of correction in me when I get it wrong.
All right. We'll start with any questions. I know it's a one-section bill, so we don't really need an in-depth sexual analysis of this piece of legislation, but any questions from the bill sponsor before we go to invite testimony? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just Senator Keel, because I question how it works for physician, podiatrist, or osteopath immunity. What about others that might give that advice? Maybe it doesn't apply. I don't know, so I'll ask the question for the record. nurse practitioners, nurses, others that may do this? Is, should this be a broader category? Would that be handled in separate legislation? Why limited to just those groups, or is that the only groups that this applies to?
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Schauer, actually, that's a great question. And since introducing the bill, I've had a number of conversations that have suggested very strongly that the bill is too narrow. It's our public process. A number of folks in the medical community have spoken with me about expanding the bill to cover advanced practice nurses, physician assistants. And I think as I have looked into that, it makes a fair amount of sense. So I don't have language crafted at this point. I've been working with a couple of folks to begin that drafting process. But I think that that the reality of Alaska's healthcare system, and you will hear from a number of medical experts who know it far better than I do as a legislator, the reality of Alaska's medical system is that we probably do want to extend that protection for curbside consults under the same set of circumstances, right? Unpaid, not being the one who treats the patient. Those consults need protection.
Just in addition to that question, are there any other court cases you're aware of nationwide that would deal with those other groups that would provide impetus to do this, or was it just this one regarding basically physicians?
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Schauer, yes. I should probably turn to my staff. I am aware of one in which an advanced practice nurse was the treating health care provider. Let me look Kathy's way.
For the record, Kathy Schlingheid, staff to Senator Keel. I don't have a case right now that involves an advanced practice nurse being the consultant, but we'll continue the research.
Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Keel, thank you for being open to my input on this, and I did have some suggestions for you, but, you know, since I've been contemplating it, one of the healthcare experts that I often consult is a pharmacist. The complexity of how a medication I might be planning to prescribe would interact with a disease condition or other medications. So they're also doing curbside consultations. So another one that I thought of. I also thought of radiologists, another common one, though I think they would fall under the physician definition. But I would throw out the pharmacist as someone else that I know I certainly call frequently, and my physician colleagues that I've worked with also consult pharmacists. So just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. Next, we'll open up to invited testimony. We have a few folks here. First, we'll go to Dr. Robert Craig, CEO of the Alaska Heart Vascular Institute. And Dr. Craig, we ask you to put yourself on record and plan for about 5 minutes for some your invited testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just as a point of correction, I'm not a physician. I'm the CEO, so my name is Robert Craig for Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute. We appreciate the opportunity to provide the testimony in favor of Senate Bill 229, and particularly thank Senator Keel for his sponsorship. I had the pleasure of speaking with him and his staff regarding the need for the legislation. As I mentioned, I'm the CEO for Alaska Heart. I've been here for just about 4 years and have roughly 30 years of administrative healthcare background and experience. Alaska Heart has 32 physicians providing cardiology expertise to the state of Alaska in the form of general cardiology, interventional, and electrophysiology. So this represents a considerable depth of cardiology expertise and experience to our state and is often in pretty high demand. And with SB 229, my goal isn't necessarily to start any sort of a tort issue or seek immunity for the care we provide to our patients, but rather to look at it as an opportunity to resolve this call dilemma in which our docs are placed on a regular basis. Dr. Kelly is here with me today, and he'll provide some specifics on the frequency and the types of calls. But what I'm concerned with is our physicians providing the cardiology guidance for a patient that may not have seen or they may not have a chart with which to provide that guidance. And so often our physicians receive calls about patients who aren't established with our practice from locations where there isn't a cardiologist present, typically in our remote and small communities in Alaska. So rather than practicing defensive medicine and insist that these patients get flown in or have to travel to our doctor's site, the ability to have a collaborative discussion in the care of a patient is far more desirable than contributing to the potential increase in healthcare costs in the state. Our physicians have always answered these calls freely without compensation, regardless of the time of day or night. And we believe these calls are valuable in terms of the expertise provided from our cardiologists with which to ensure a patient receives the right care at the right time. So to be clear, these calls are uncompensated. And they're not provided during EMTALA call hours. Rather, this is an avenue to provide assistance to other healthcare providers in remote areas for their patients without the physician being left vulnerable. So, Mr. Chairman, for these reasons, Alaska Heart would like to express our support for Senate Bill 229 and its ability to maintain curbside consults, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Craig. Any questions for Mr. Craig? Seeing none, while you're also there, if Dr. Jacob Kelly wanted to add a few additional comments.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jacob Kelly, and I've been a cardiologist and advanced heart failure and cardiac transplant cardiologist in Alaska for 3 years. I graduated medical school from the University of Colorado, completed internship, residency, and chief residency at UT Southwestern in Dallas, Texas, before finally going to Duke for 5 years and completing my cardiology fellowship, research fellowship, and advanced heart failure and cardiac transplantation fellowship at Duke University in North Carolina. I share this with you because, like most members of my practice at Alaska Heart and Vascular who've trained at the best institutions across the United States, I came to Alaska for the unique ability to pursue outdoor lifestyle with my patients and to care for these patients and a diverse population of patients across an enormous landscape that actually happens to be off the road system many times. In the tradition of medicine, we share, teach, and learn together. This makes medicine a unique and fascinating and rewarding profession. It is the combination of this tradition of medicine, the human nature of wanting to care and to deliver care to all individuals despite location, ability to pay, race, gender, location that drives me and my colleagues to practice medicine in Alaska and to help provide curbside consultation or really just to share anything that I know with any medical provider out there from the Aleutians all the way to Juneau, including Anchorage, the Anchorage Bowl, locally and remotely. Specific questions I often receive at night when I'm on EMTALA call but now just fielding calls generally for the practice include atypical chest pain in someone that has low risk to low intermediate risk that might be quite remote, and it would disrupt the workflow, the patient's ability to pay, to immediately transfer them potentially on multiple flights to get here, when sometimes we can just reassess the risk, give some good education, and know that if the patient were to get worse, they could come back to the provider, and then we could facilitate a more urgent transfer. However, there's risk there for me with you open up this to curbside consultation, in the 0.1 to 1% of times it could be more severe. I often have patients with heart failure symptoms, which is one of the biggest burdens to all healthcare systems, costing something like $38 billion per year in the United States. And then I can guide a clinician in Juneau how to best treat this patient without providing the risk of an potentially unnecessary transfer to Anchorage so that I can see them myself and potentially give slightly better care when I'm able to guide them home and see them in an outpatient setting in a much more controlled environment. I receive calls with infectious symptoms that could be concerning for endocarditis and sometimes just general well-being questions that I do my best to answer. And I and all my colleagues do this because we want to help each other in the spirit of medicine, which is to teach, to share, despite cost, ability to pay or receive. And we enjoy this and brings lots of satisfaction to us. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee, for exploring the opportunity of this Senate Bill 229, as well as Senator Jesse Kill sponsored this, and allowing me to share my experiences, and I welcome any questions from you and members of the committee.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Kelly. I do have a question. Is there a difference between your formal and informal type of consults that you do?
Well, a short answer, medium answer, long answer. Short answer is yes. Medium answer is sometimes, and long answer is No, but I guess what you're saying is, yeah, an informal consultation on the telephone, giving general advice, probably lasts 30 seconds to 3 minutes. You can kind of walk someone through a few things. Typically, most of us end the conversation with, if the patient gets sicker, if things change, if you're concerned at all, please call us back. We can arrange transfer if you're worried or if the patient's worried, et cetera. I don't typically get a lot of information, but you share little bits of information. They may give you a brief reading of an EKG or a chest X-ray. I typically am unable to visualize those things. So I would call that an unofficial consult, a curbside consult. There are some intermediate things, and that would get trickier with the bill, and I don't think that folks are trying to approve this now, when you may have borderline amounts of the material. And telehealth is attempting to address this, but the difficulty with telehealth is you have to engage vital signs and certain amount of electronic and durable equipment to transfer to us. So that would be the intermediate. And then a full consult, you typically can see the patient, or if you had official telehealth care, you can visualize the patient and receive vitals, and you're able to review a chart, touch the patient, listen to the patient, potentially provide exact medical care at that time.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for Dr. Kelly? Senator Von Neumann?
Yes, and so you mentioned telehealth, and of course we're definitely looking at that right now. In telehealth, is there generally fee-for-service in that regard? So that would fall then outside the purview of this bill?
Yes, thank you through the chairman for this very interesting question. Yes, so telehealth is a separate billable charge. That would be separate from this bill, bill and billable charge. But telehealth is complicated because right now you typically have to go to a site that probably has a nurse or a medical assistant with expensive equipment that you can actually have a auscultatory stethoscope, a blood pressure, vital sign measuring machines, et cetera. So, you know, without speaking out of turn, you know, if you could expand telehealth to just involve conversations and where you could review vital signs without physically looking at a patient or having these vitals, then that could be expanded. But that's beyond this bill and not specific to this bill. And you would have liability if you could engage in true telehealth.
Well, thank you. I think that telehealth is, while I wouldn't actually call it emerging because it's been going on, I think that it's expanding and its definition is expanding. And I think that's just something for the bill sponsor just to kind of contemplate or have a quick conversation, as in if the doctor's not laying hands on, but he's getting a reading of someone is doing his hands for him, that's option A. But then option B, so is that enough to trigger the bill or the safety of the bill or not? Or trigger B, is that the same as just what you just mentioned, Dr. Kelly, about reading an EKG, just reading after 30 seconds to 2 minutes? How is that any different? And if money changes hands, then that to me is the trigger. But I don't know if there – you said, I think, Senator Keogh, that this Minnesota law is recent, and so I don't know if it has been tested in court how far curbside will go.
Right.
I don't know if that's a question.
I think the sponsor looks like he wants to answer that, but we can come back to him a little later to answer that. Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to maybe try to answer it. I thought on line 14, it specifically says not compensated, and I think that's the trigger regardless. And because it's the trigger, that this nuance that I think you rightly bring up has a boundary. It's kind of a hard boundary. And I think that what this is doing is ensuring that those informal conversations can continue, but that we do have a process that's emerging. As you point out, Senator Von Imhoff, that is going to require a whole new set of review and regulation. I think we're going to probably pass a bill tomorrow that deals with it. And so I'm encouraged by this bill because it's drawing the hard line that the testifier just mentioned, that hard boundary, if you will. And I'm seeing Senator Giesel nod too. So I think that might be – maybe is that answering the question? I think it might be, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions, Dr. Kelly? Seeing none, thank you for your time today and providing in testimony. Next in the room, we have Dr. Bob Urata. You want to come up to the G chair here and pull up a mic and place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much for allowing me to testify. My name is Dr. Bob Urata. I was born and raised in Wrangell, Alaska, and I've been practicing family medicine in Juneau since 1984. I speak in support of Senate Bill 229. The purpose of the bill is to protect the consultant from lawsuits and to allow this important service to my patients to continue improving overall care and keeping costs under control. I utilize this service in my practice at least five times a week, calling various specialists, including heart doctors, cancer specialists, and other specialists like chest surgeons, neurosurgeons, high-risk obstetricians, endocrinologists who deal with thyroid and diabetes, and neurologists. These specialists are not available in Juneau, and if they stop giving me curbside consultations over the phone, it would require a plane trip to Anchorage or Seattle to get the person adequate consultations and help with their care. This costs a lot of money. I encourage you also to expand this bill to include mid-level practitioners like PA and nurse practitioners for getting curbside consults from doctors like me. I have given curbside consults for patients who live in whose providers and the patients live in Yakutat, Skagway, Haines, and Gustavus. These mid-levels are the only health care available in those towns, and they do a great job, but occasionally call to discuss cases that may have to be sent to Juneau for further care, or sometimes to Anchorage if the case indicates. This is more of a triage type curbside consult. I also want to add that I agree with Senator Giesel to include pharmacists, because I find with the complexity of various medications now, I need to ask a pharmacist about different side effects, drug interactions, and things of that sort. I thank you for your support of this most important bill.
Any questions? Thank you for your time. Now we'll open up to public testimony. I don't see anyone signed up online. Anyone else here in the room of Juneau wish to testify on Senate Bill 229? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. I just want to ask the bill sponsor to come back to the table for any other questions or closing comments. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Senator, you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate the hearing and the great questions today. I think the question on telehealth is an excellent one. The bill you have before you does not immunize the doctor if they examine the patient or they treat the patient themselves. So if there is a healthcare provider there with the patient providing the treatment, doing the exam, only then would that person's consultation with the doc, the other provider elsewhere, fall into the bill. Generally speaking, when a provider treats a patient by telehealth, there is a doctor-patient relationship today or a duty of care type relationship today, and this bill would maintain that. And of course, as someone mentioned, there's generally a bill for those services. Mr. Chairman, the other question that was raised was about sort of the development of medical malpractice law and the statute. Not an attorney, so I will give you a relatively limited answer, but my understanding is that medical malpractice law in our country has developed a great deal more by case law than it has by legislative action. It's not alone in the tort field. The new development from the Minnesota Supreme Court, I think, is a step in the wrong direction. So Senate Bill 220, this bill would put a legislative marker down here in Alaska and say we're not going in that direction here.
Senator Von der Vaughn.
Yes, I just want to make sure that we are not confusing. The definition of telehealth is different than an electronic transfer of health information, like emailing lab results, emailing an X-ray that a doctor elsewhere would be looking at. That's not telehealth, it's my understanding. And I appreciate what my senator to the right indicated, compensated for the consultation. So if there is a transfer of electronically of information and another doctor takes a look at it, that is not telehealth.
Mr. Chairman, in response to Senator Von Imhoff, I agree. And in fact, in developing the bill to the point that it was introduced, there was confusion in an earlier draft, and we took that out. So the consulting doc, the one who's protected by the bill, could in fact look at an EKG under this bill. Again, as long as that consulting doc is not determining the treatment for the patient, is not the one making the decisions.
Senator Giesel.
You know, another way to describe the distinction of curbside versus telehealth or telemedicine is, and the compensation, you can't be compensated for something that hasn't been documented. In other words, the consulting physician, let's say, gets the lab results and then actually does write a report based on those lab results, which is then sent back to the person that asked for that consultation, and then that clinician can bill for the time to write that report, right? Or examines through telehealth, they document. That's how they get reimbursed. But when we're talking about a curbside, it's kind of a, I've got this patient, and I think I'm hearing this heart murmur, and they've had a recent sore throat. What do you think I should do, right? I mean, there you're giving kind of informal advice, and you're not billing for it. So that's kind of the difference. This is a situation where you're not billing for the information that or the advice that you're giving. It's very different than telehealth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It won't surprise you that I couldn't put it better than that. I'll point out one last thing just in my closing, Mr. Chairman. I think it's telling that you had a group of folks here today in your testimony advocating for being able to continue to not get paid for some of what they do. That will tell you, I think, what we're talking about here and the role it plays in health care for Alaskans.
Well, thank you. Any other questions for the sponsor? Well, I think the bill sponsor and the committee chairman need to get together to look at some amendments or doing a committee substitute here to bring this back up to address some of the concerns and feedback that you had and some other committee members would like to see added to this bill. Thus, we'll set this bill aside and bring it up here when we can have that all worked out. And that concludes our business for this afternoon. Our next meeting date is going to be Wednesday. We'll look at Senate Bill 179 again to finish up that piece of legislation to see what the committee will. Make sure if you have any amendments that you guys can let our office know here by tomorrow. And we will have a hearing on Senate Bill 238, the Involuntary Commitment and Protective Custody by Senate Rules Committee on behalf of the governor. Are there any other closing comments? Senator Giesel.
Well, just a question, Mr. Chairman. 179, what was that again?
Oh, the Nurses License Multi-Compact.
Okay, and I submitted a series of questions that that you had asked if any of us have questions or needed more information.
Yes, we're still trying to get that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
And don't worry, we're not going to try to move that out without trying to get that, but if you have amendments, please let us know. By Tuesday, close of business. Senator Von Imhoff?
Nope.
Okay. All right. With that, we are adjourned at 2:18 p.m.